eagle has landed.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
I consider myself the luckiest man.
I have a dream today.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst.
And I am Jamie Langhorst.
You're listening to a podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. You're listening to podcast episode number 90, and we're recording this on June 11th, 2007, in Springfield, Illinois. We're actually on vacation, and we spent a great day today looking at a lot of different historic Lincoln sites here in Springfield, Illinois. And the bulk of our day was spent at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. So we're going to talk a little bit about our experiences there. This museum is relatively new. It was opened in April of 2005, so it's been open about 2 years now. And I can remember first seeing this on a C-SPAN program when they actually opened the museum and they were going through the different displays and Brian Lamb was interviewing some of the people involved. And I knew instantly that this had to be something that I saw in the relatively near future. And so when we were talking about where to go on vacation, this was actually one of our first choices on where to go this summer. Just some kind of details about what happened as far as when we got there today. There are basically two separate entities here. You have the museum and you have the library. And the library is basically a research library. And if you just go to the library, there's no fee involved. Mostly, you know, though, you'd have to have a purpose really for going to the library part, I believe, to really get the most out of that facility. We're going to talk today basically mostly about our museum experience. And there is a fee required to enter the museum. It's at $7.50 for an adult, and they do have some different reductions in price for children and seniors and things like that. If you are a teacher, they do allow teachers to enter the museum free. You can actually print off a page from the website and fill in your information about where you teach and your address. Or if you bring proof of teaching, I guess like a badge or a pay stub or some type of thing like that, they will let you enter the museum once for free as a teacher. And the hours are 9 to 4, and once you pay for the day, you're good for the entire day. So for example, Jamie and I came in and they give you a wristband, and then we actually left a couple times. We left to go eat lunch, and then we actually left to go look at another Lincoln site a couple blocks away and then come back a little bit later. So once you have paid for the day, you can kind of go and come. If you'd like to leave the building, you can come back. We actually parked in the parking garage that's right next to the museum, and we mentioned in an earlier podcast that we went to the Lincoln home first and parked over there and paid for some parking there and then came to the parking garage right next to the museum. We would really suggest going to the actual parking garage for the museum because that's your best bet, I think, as far as having your car parked, and it's probably the best value. It's a max of $6.50 a day to park there for the entire day and do a lot of different Lincoln things.
It was $2 an hour at the Lincoln home, so a huge price difference.
And there's a pretty small lot over by the Lincoln home, so if you happen to get there on a day that's not too busy, we got there at about 8:30 this morning, and it wasn't too busy yet, and there were a couple spots open, but you know, knowing what we know now, we just park in the parking garage right next to the actual museum. Now, when you first walk into the facility, you have this big open area, kind of almost like a commons area. They refer to it as a plaza, and that part we have some pictures of. We'll be able to put some pictures of that on the blog. There's really not any photography allowed other than the plaza and just like the children's room that we're going to talk about a little bit later. It's kind of a neat experience when you first walk in because it's really open. There's a really high ceiling in there, and there's different things to see and like different entrances to the different exhibits. For example, you can see part of the log cabin exhibit when you actually start learning about Lincoln's life, but then you also see the front that looks like the White House, and you've got the Lincoln family in full statue, life size, And there's a lot of statues. It's almost kind of like a wax museum type thing. I mean, these things are real. I mean, they look very, very realistic. And you can actually see the Lincoln family. You can go and get your picture taken next to it. There were pictures of families and things constantly being taken in front of the figures. And then they also have some other figures. They have Frederick Douglass. They got Sojourner Truth. They've got the generals McClellan and Grant. Then they also have John Wilkes Booth in the front. And this was something that I kind of talked about a little bit with one of the people on staff there. If you listen to the podcast, you know that one of the books that I've really enjoyed recently is Manhunt by Swanson, that talks about the 12-day hunt for Lincoln's killers. And at the end of that book, Swanson really makes the claim that in some ways Booth really did get away with his crime. I mean, Booth is really almost as well known as the president basically for assassinating Lincoln. And it just kind of strikes me as odd that there is an actual figure of John Wilkes Booth kind of right in front of the White House. And when I talked to one of the people on staff, you know, they said you can't tell the story of Lincoln without really including the assassination. And later there is a scene that they depict with figures and statues and stuff, and they show Booth there as well. But I don't know, I just thought it was kind of odd that Booth was right there in front of the White House. What did you think about that, Jamie?
I also thought it was a little bit odd. You know, I don't like that, I guess, John Wilkes Booth is famous for assassinating the president, and it's just as well known, because I certainly don't think that he should be, though I think we should point out that the position of the statue was such that if you stand right behind the John Wilkes Booth statue, he is actually looking at the back of Lincoln's head. So there's, I think, some symbolism there, and I think that was probably the aim of the museum. I mean, I don't think they were trying to make John Wilkes Booth more famous, but I think that it has to do with some of the symbolism of him being there, I think.
Right, and it didn't like ruin my museum experience, and it didn't like make my blood boil or anything like that. I mean, it just, I always think it's interesting how Booth is portrayed, and since I read that book, I really tend to think about that more. And you know, it's, you know, probably slightly controversial, but it doesn't allow people to talk about it and kind of discuss John Wilkes Booth's his place in history in relation to Lincoln. So the plaza area is really neat, and then you can pretty much decide what order you want to go through the museum. There's two movies that we're going to talk about, and those basically start every 15 minutes throughout the day, and so at any time you can go to one of those. We actually didn't start with like his early years. We actually started with a different part, and we saw a video at the beginning and then with the White House years and things. But you can basically start your journey however you'd like. We're going to kind of talk about it a little bit in the order that they kind of have things numbered if you want to go through.
Like chronological order.
Yeah, it's kind of chronological throughout their lives and things like that. Now, the first gallery is called the Illinois Gallery, and this is the temporary exhibit. And this is going to constantly change to kind of draw people to the museum that have been there before. And I know that in the past they've had just different exhibits on, for example, the history of the Lincoln Tomb. They had one about the actual assassination. What it is currently is an exhibit on Mary Todd Lincoln, First Lady of Controversy. And that'll actually be the temporary exhibit until October 28th of 2007. Jamie, you want to talk a little bit about this exhibit?
Sure. I really liked this exhibit. I didn't really know a lot about Mary Todd, but I found her quite intriguing and quite the individual. I think it's fair to say that she and Abraham Lincoln were almost polar opposites. They both loved politics. She was extremely well-educated. Abraham Lincoln was not, though he was very intelligent, I would argue. He seemed to be very quiet and kind of listened a lot to what other people were saying, and she seemed to chatter all the time. So I think that's part of the reason that they maybe, you know, had a decent relationship, which can be argued sometimes that maybe they didn't. She led a very interesting life. Her mother, you know, died when she was pretty young, when she was 9. Her father remarried, I think it was less than 2 months after her mother was buried. It was, like, very soon.
They started dating, like, they said 2 weeks after or something like that.
Yeah. Which, you know, was a little odd, I thought. In fact, I didn't think that was a little bit of controversy in Kentucky when they started dating and then when they got married. Anyhow, Mary Todd actually went to live with her sister in Springfield, Illinois, because she didn't get along with her stepmother. So she moved in with her sister, Elizabeth Edwards, and Elizabeth's husband. And I think that's where her life in Springfield really began. And she really liked it in Springfield. She was very well educated. She got along with everybody in Springfield. She was definitely a socialite. She was very much sought after by young gentlemen, one of which was Abraham Lincoln. But another suitor was Stephen Douglas, which I did not, I did not know. I thought that was a little bit ironic that they both really wanted to marry Mary Todd Lincoln.
I thought it was kind of interesting. They, you know, they talk about how, especially when she got to Washington, it seemed like nothing that she did pleased people, because at first they said, well, you're basically this country hick and you don't know anything about social life in Washington. And then when she actually went out and tried to redo the White House and bought a lot of fine china and tried to really make things look nice, then everybody said, oh, you're just wasting the government's money. And it seems like she could never really fit in with the socialites in Washington.
Right. She did have a lot of parties in Springfield. She had parties all the time. She loved to entertain people. She liked to interact with people. She loved to discuss politics. She would have hundreds of people over at her house in Springfield. And then when she moved to Washington, she would still have parties, but it was kind of like everybody was insulting her either to her face or behind her back. And she really had no friends in Washington, which I find a little bit sad. That, you know, she was not a stupid person by any means, and she was under just as much stress as anybody during that time. And one of her rival socialites in Washington was actually Stephen Douglas's wife. They didn't get along very well, and she didn't like it when Stephen Douglas's wife would talk to Mr. Lincoln.
Another room right next to that is called Mrs. Lincoln's Attic, and this was kind of a neat room because it was like a hands-on kids room. They wanted kids to go in there and you know, touch everything and handle everything. Lots and lots of hands-on exhibits.
Yeah, they had a lot of toys that the little Lincoln boys would have played with, Willie and Tad. So the kids were free to play those games, and they had period attire that they were, that the kids were allowed to dress up in, hats and dresses and shawls, all kinds of things. They were able to draw on little chalkboards and put a puzzle together. And then they had this huge dollhouse, and it had, you know, complete furniture and everything, and that was awesome. You could, you know, our three-year-old would have gone nuts in there. She would have spent the whole day playing with, in that whole room. It was like this giant playroom. But it was all, you know, historically accurate. So, yeah, it was really cool. If you have kids and you want to come to the museum and you don't think they're going to last, if there's a couple of you, you can probably take turns, and the kids would, you know, love that room. There's tons of stuff to do.
And, of course, they had a whole display of Lincoln logs that kids could play with, too. So
yeah. We should point out, we did a podcast the other night about a Frank Lloyd Wright house here in Springfield, and Frank Lloyd Wright's son, John Lloyd Wright, invented Lincoln Logs. And Frank Lloyd Wright said that they would never take off and catch on, and they obviously have.
Yeah, we have a huge barrel of them at home that our three-year-old plays with. So,
so of course, they sell Lincoln Logs in Springfield.
All right, the next part, they kind of talk about the journey that Lincoln took, basically from his boyhood all the way through until the end of his life. So they have the journey kind of broken up into two parts. They have part one, which is the pre-presidential years, and then they have part two, the White House years. And when you go through the exhibit on the pre-presidential years, you start off with this authentic log cabin, and again, you see Abe Lincoln as a boy. He's sitting in front of the fire with the dog, teaching himself to read, and you really get an idea for what the log cabin that he grew up in actually looked like, and it's kind of a stark contrast to what you see a little bit later in life with both the home in Springfield and then, of course, also the White House. But they've got exhibits on what he did as far as a young boy, his journey down the Mississippi River when he worked on the river for a short time period, and he saw slave trade down in New Orleans. They have a little display of a slave auction that's taking place. They also have a law office reconstruction where they actually you can see his two boys playing in the law office, and they're basically throwing an inkwell like a baseball game, and kind of shows a little bit of the lighter side of Lincoln. And then it sets up the election of 1860. Oh, it also talks about Mary Todd Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln starting to date. Then they have the wedding, and you actually get to see the marriage license and things like that. And then they set up the election of 1860. And this is one of my favorite parts of the museum, because as they talk about the election of 1860, you walk into a room, and it looks like a TV station control room. And it's basically Tim Russert talking about the campaign in a modern type of technology situation, but going back and looking at how people thought about the election in 1860. And this is actually almost exactly like what we did as an assignment this past year in class, and I didn't actually know that this existed in the museum, but they actually make TV campaign ads for each of the four candidates. So you see John Bell, and you see Breckinridge, and you see Douglas, and you see Lincoln, and the entire thing, I think, takes about 5 minutes to cycle through, but it's like you're watching modern-day news talking about the election of 1860. So I thought that was really cool to incorporate technology and modern times with the issues that were happening in 1860. And then the second part, when you go into Journey Part 2, that's the White House years. And when you first walk in, you see several different dresses. You see Mary Todd Lincoln's, I think she worked for the inaugural. Mm-hmm. And then you see some of the other socialites in Washington and the types of dresses that they would have had. And they talk about how they viewed Mary Todd Lincoln a little bit. And then you walk into a place called the Whispering Room. And you see all these different political cartoons that talk about Abraham Lincoln during his presidency in a not-so-flattering way. And it's kind of a neat entryway, because as you walk in, there's all these political cartoons on the wall, but the frames aren't all square. Some of them are kind of slanted. And then you've got these speakers above you with voices of people that are basically criticizing the president. And it's like people talking over other people, and there's all these different layers of audio, and it's almost like you're walking into this like den of criticism. And I think that's important for especially our students to understand, because today our students see Lincoln on the penny and on the $5 bill, and there's the Lincoln Memorial, and everybody really thinks of Lincoln as being this almost like godlike figure, and we forget that at the time a lot of people, and both in Washington and other parts of the country, really thought that Lincoln should not be president, and they had a lot of different criticisms of him. And there's actually a book you can get at the gift shop that has all the different editorial cartoons, and I actually purchased that so I can use it in class next year. And there's actually several books out there that show the political cartoons of the Civil War. This little booklet costs about $10, I believe, and it shows just the political cartoons about Lincoln, so it was pretty neat. The next phase goes into the Emancipation Proclamation, and you walk into a full-size replica of the White House, where Lincoln is reading the Emancipation Proclamation for the first time to his cabinet. And I commented to Jamie, it's kind of like you're walking into an actual team of rivals living scene, because all the people, you know, that were in his cabinet that are featured in the book Team of Rivals actually have their own full-life statue in that room. So, and that's it. As we talk about these things, you know, when you walk into this room, or you're walking into the log cabin, or you're walking into the office, I mean, every statue is life size, and in some cases, they've really created a lot of space to give like a full dramatic appearance to these different settings. So it's not like you're walking into a small room and everything's kind of crammed in there. You're walking into big spaces that have a feeling of space and size, and it's really neat when you walk into there.
It's really incredible when you start reading about each of those people in his cabinet, because when you start reading, you almost feel the tension that must have been in the room at the time they're discussing that, because they, you know, not very many people in his cabinet, I think one person in his cabinet, really supported Lincoln. Everybody else had their own views on what he should be doing.
Yeah, I think Gideon Welles, the Secretary of the Navy, was like one of the only people that really supported it at that point. So, and then after you see the setting in the cabinet meeting, you walk into this little hallway, and they've got this great piece of technology where there's about five or six people being shown as part of a video on each side, and they're expressing their views about the Emancipation Proclamation, which again, many people didn't agree with. And so they have these like floating head video type things with a black background, and all these people are really upset with President Lincoln. And then you walk through there and you see President Lincoln talking about the Emancipation Proclamation, and again, you've got this like video with shadows and stuff in the background. So it's really a cool way to present the Emancipation Proclamation. Then you walk into the next section about the Civil War. And this is the part that I saw in the C-SPAN video that has really made me want to come and see this museum. There's a huge wall, I guess for lack of a better term, a huge wall. It's basically a video screen, or it projects a video onto, I guess. And you can see the entire Civil War in 4 minutes. And what they've done throughout the video is you've got 1 second representing 1 week of the Civil War. And you're looking at a map of the United States. And you can see where the Union controls and where the Confederacy controls. And then on the bottom, you have a running total of the number of casualties for both sides. So during the rolling of this video, you can see the actual troop movements and how, you know, the North kind of dips into the South, and then eventually the South, especially in the North, in the later part of the war when they, like, you know, advance all the way up into Pennsylvania. But you can see this ebb and flow of the different lines between the Confederate held positions and the Union positions. But then you also see the totaling of all the casualties in the bottom. And then as the war progresses, you see the different battles pop up. Shiloh, Antietam, Gettysburg, all those things are happening on the video screen. And it's an amazing 4 minute video. And, you know, I hope at some point in the future they make that video available as like a DVD or different things for teachers to be able to use. Because right now you can't use it in the classroom because of copyright restrictions and things like that. So I do hope that at some time they allow teachers to be able to use that in their classroom. Then eventually we get to the end of the war. They've got different picture frames showing, for example, the re-election in 64, and then they've got like the war ending when he finds out that Lee has surrendered, and then eventually it moves into the assassination. And when you walk into the assassination part, they do have a full-size replica of the box in Ford's Theater. And you can actually see John Wilkes Booth kind of moving into that back where the door was into the box, and you actually can hear in the background the play going on and all those types of things. So it's pretty dramatic. And then after that, you walk into a room where you can actually see a replica of the coffin that Lincoln was laid in state in Springfield before he was buried in Springfield. And again, this is a huge space, and it's almost like you're walking into the actual room in the old Capitol when he was lying in state. So very dramatic and very powerful representation of the assassination, and then also what it looked like when Lincoln was lying in state. After that, or next to that, when you come out of after the assassination part, there's something called the Treasures Gallery. And I thought this was one of the really cool parts of the museum, because you actually get to see some one-of-a-kind documents. And within this gallery, you can actually see the Everett copy of the Gettysburg Address. It's one of five handwritten copies in Lincoln's own handwriting. And if you've read the Gettysburg Gospel, they do talk quite a bit about the different copies that survived. And this is the Everett copy. So that was really neat to be able to see. And then they also have the portfolio that Lincoln carried all of his documents around while he was president. And it's a leather case. It's got his name in kind of like embossed in gold and stuff. And, you know, just to think about that he had, you know, drafts of the Emancipation Proclamation, and, you know, he kept all of his important papers within that portfolio. That was really neat to see. They also have a hand-signed copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, which is a very rare piece to have in Lincoln's hand. Well, it's actually printed, and then he signed it at the bottom. And then also in that gallery is the pen that supposedly he used to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, along with the inkwells that he used throughout his presidency. And there's things like music boxes, there's a couple, there's I think a ring there of Mary Todd Lincoln after Lincoln died. She had like a mourning ring created and things like that. So like, you know, truly one of a kind things that you're only going to see at the museum here in Springfield. Now there's also two videos or two movies that are happening, two different theaters, and they each last about 15 minutes. And one of them is called Lincoln's Eyes. It's kind of an overview of his life. And yeah, we're not going to give away anything during the movie, but there's strobe lights and there's loud noises that happen, some special effects as far as smoke effects and things. So, you know, it's different than just sitting in a room and the lights go down and you watch a video.
Yeah, no, this is an incredible video. Probably not kid-friendly, especially to very small children. I mean, if you have a 10-year-old, I would take a 10-year-old. I probably would not take our 3-year-old. Might be a little bit scary for younger kids, but, I mean, it's an awesome video. It's not just your typical museum 15-minute video.
Yeah, and I would ask, you know, about, you know, if they think it's appropriate for your age child or whatever. I mean, it's not the so much the content of the video. It's kind of like some of the special effects that take place throughout the movie. The one that I really liked the most was called Ghosts of the Library. And that one's, again, about 15 minutes long. And it's kind of telling the story about restoring artifacts in the presidential library. And but it actually uses holograms to create things that are kind of like ghosts in the library. And I don't know, it might sound really weird, but I mean, right now, as I'm sitting here at the end of the day, I don't know if part of what was in there was actually a real person or if it was all holograms, because it's like you're looking through a glass wall. And I mean, I really thought that I was watching a real person, and then at the end, because of some of the special effects, I don't know if I was watching like just multiple holograms throughout the entire thing. So we're actually going to go back tomorrow. We're going to ask somebody. But it's like an amazing piece of special effects, and I mean, does a really good job of kind of creating the whole mystery of history and all the different, you know, reasons why we look at artifacts and things like that. Yeah. And then they also do have a museum cafe, so if you want to take a break during the day and you don't want to go out and eat it somewhere else and come back, they have a cafe where you can get tons of different things. I remember looking at the menu and seeing the George McClellan chicken salad sandwich. We actually stopped there in the afternoon, and my wife had...
I had a Mary Todd brownie.
Mary Todd brownie.
It's ironic, since she didn't really cook all that much.
And I had a ice cream bar and a pop, and so you can eat an entire meal there, or you can just stop off for a little snack there as well. And I mean, it was moderately priced. I mean, they weren't like trying to gouge you for prices or anything.
Oh no, it was the same.
Like a fam.
Probably would have spent just as much eating there as we did eating downtown. Very reasonable prices though.
Yeah. And then they do have an amazing gift shop. I mean, at the end, I mean, you know, we have a 3-year-old, so we bought her some kids' books. There were tons of toys. We got a little kid's t-shirt that says Future President on it, things like that. And then they've got videos, books, t-shirts. I mean, anything you can imagine with Lincoln. And it wasn't like trinkety type stuff. I mean, it's
no,
like
it was
nice.
Very nice quality.
Nice stuff. So we had an amazing day at the museum. I would definitely recommend, if you have the opportunity to come to Springfield, to go ahead and kind of carve out several different hours. I mean, so far it was the highlight of our summer vacation, and I definitely want to try and bring students back at some point. I'm about 5 hours away, so I'm trying to figure out a way we can maybe do kind of like a drive-in, you know, the day before, and then kind of do a bunch of different historic Lincoln sites the next day, but it kind of include about 3 or 4 hours at the museum.
Yeah. Don't come to the museum like expecting just to spend, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour, because it's an incredible museum. They've done a really, really nice job. So, I mean, expect to spend some time. Even if you're not all that into history, it's still a really cool museum. I think most people would get a lot out of the museum.
Now, if you've been to the museum and you'd like to add some comments, you can add a comment to the blog post on the website, which is at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, or you can email us directly at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. So thanks for listening to our relatively long, review of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, Illinois, and we'll talk again soon. Bye.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.